Good morning.
Good morning.
One more quick thing for you guys. No matter how you feel as parents, if they start getting squeaky and squirmy and all that, do not feel like you need to take them out here. Okay, it is perfectly fine. It is a joyous sound, and we would all like to listen to it, right? Yeah, they had to sit for 7 hours on the tarmac on the airplane, and they said that the two girls did better than most of the adults on the plane. 7 hours, my word. Well, I'd like to invite you this morning to think to a time in your life, because I would suspect that all of us have had at least one time like this in our life. But think to a time when you were asked a question and you had no idea how to answer it. You were completely unprepared for the question that you were asked. How did you feel in that moment when you were completely unprepared? You were a little bit thrown off balance. You didn't know what to say. You didn't know what to do. You didn't know how to respond. And you just felt so overwhelmed because you weren't prepared to answer the question that you were asked. Now, if you're a follower of Jesus, think to a time, and my guess is that each and every one of us who are followers of Jesus have had a time when we were asked a question about what we believed or why we believed what we believed for which we were unprepared. We didn't know how to answer a question about what we believed, maybe because the question was asked when we didn't have a lot of time to answer it. You know, maybe we weren't unprepared to answer it in a concise. We wanted to explain and have this long conversation about what we believe, but there just wasn't time. Or maybe one of the reasons you couldn't answer the question and weren't prepared was because it was what we might call one of the hit-and-run conversations. The person who asked the question isn't really interested in giving you the opportunity to answer. They're just asking a question to maybe even take a little bit of a dig at what you believe, because they clearly don't believe the same thing, and they're just kind of trying to throw you off balance. I mean, the purpose of their question is to throw you off balance. Well, sometimes when we're in these situations where we're completely unprepared and someone comes and asks us why we believe what we believe, or asks us to clarify something about what we believe, and we feel or maybe even are unprepared for it, these times are often met with a moment of awkward silence. And sometimes silence speaks volumes, right? But here's the thing. They don't have to be met with awkward silence. As followers of Jesus, we can actually be prepared to answer questions about what we believe and why we believe what we believe, even in the moments when there's little time and maybe even less interest. We can be prepared. We don't have to be intimidated by those moments. As followers of Jesus, we don't have to be intimidated or unsettled when someone comes to us and puts us on the spot about what we believe and why we believe. Now, as you've thought back to those moments, the moments when you were unprepared and someone came and asked, wouldn't it have been comforting to you to know that you could have been prepared with an answer? That you could have vocalized what you believe and why you believe it in a nice, quick, succinct, clear way? That even in the hit-and-run type of conversation, you could have given them an answer in a moment? Now, maybe you're sitting here today and thinking, I don't really have those conversations anymore. I don't have those opportunities anymore. I don't know anybody. Maybe it happens at the restaurant with the server, and they overhear a conversation and they ask a question and they've got to go all that. Maybe it happens at the grandkids' ball game, where you're sitting at the ball game and somebody says something, and you get just a moment to engage in a maybe it happens with your grandkids or your great-grandkids. Maybe there's a moment where they come to you and say, Grandma, Grandpa, why do you believe what you believe? And in that moment, wouldn't you like to have an answer? One of Jesus' early followers was a guy by the name of Peter. And before he became a follower of Jesus, Peter was a pretty average, ordinary fisherman of the day. It was likely that Peter worked with his father and maybe even his grandfather. And there was going to come a day where Peter was going to inherit the fishing business. It's just the way the culture worked. He was going to inherit the fishing business, take it over, and then eventually hand it off to his kids, who would hand it off to the next generation, and they would take it and go. So fishing was a part of what Peter did every day. And one day, after Peter had been fishing all night, Jesus is teaching a crowd while Peter is cleaning up the nets, getting everything put away, and getting ready to go home and rest before going back out that night and fishing and doing it all over again. But as Jesus is teaching, Peter, though he's busy, is listening. And whatever Jesus is teaching begins to catch Peter's ear. And then before Peter knows it, Jesus says, hey, the crowd's gathered a certain way. Could I use your boat? Yeah, could you let me use your boat to go out a little bit and kind of use it as a stage to speak to the people? And so Peter says, sure, we can do that. So they go out. And then while they're out there and Jesus is teaching Peter, or teaching the people, all of a sudden he turns to Peter and says, hey, he said, let's take the boat out into the deep waters and do a little bit of fishing. And Peter's like, Jesus, you're out of your mind. You may be good at carpentry, but you know nothing about fishing. You may be good at teaching people, but you know nothing about the fact that we fish at night because the water's cool. And we fish in the shallow waters because that's where the fish come at night. And you're asking me in the heat of the day to go out and fish in the deep waters? You don't do that. But for some reason, Peter doesn't. Peter goes out, and they wind up and catch more fish than he may have, I'm making this part up, may have ever caught in his entire lifetime. In fact, they caught so many fish that they had to call another boat to come out and help them haul the fish in. And the boats were so overloaded, the net started to break, and the boat started to sink, and all that, because Peter did what Jesus asked him to do. And then Peter, when they get back, Jesus comes up with this brilliant idea for Peter's life. He said, hey, you let me use your boat. And then we went out and we caught more fish than maybe you've ever caught in a lifetime. Now, the biblical narrative doesn't say they caught more fish than they ever caught in a lifetime. I'm putting that into the story for dramatic effect. And it's having dramatic effect because you're actually still awake. So Jesus says, you've caught more fish than you ever caught in your lifetime. Well, at the very least, you caught more fish than you ever imagined you would. Now, why don't you leave everything? Leave the family business. Fishing for fish. No more fishing for fish. Why don't you follow me and let me teach you how to fish for people? And Peter looks at Jesus and says, but Jesus, somebody might ask me a question I don't have an answer to. And I'm not prepared for that. Again, that's not in the story. I made that part up because that's probably what I think I would have said to Jesus had he said that to me. But for whatever reason, Peter does. Peter leaves everything and follows Jesus. And Peter becomes a key leader in the launch of the early church. At a time when being a follower of Jesus was incredibly dangerous. In one of the letters that he wrote, Paul writes to the first century followers of Jesus. And in it, he gives some incredible insight about being prepared in situations for which we feel unprepared. And here's what he writes. Who is going to harm you if you are eager to do good? But even if you should suffer for what is right, you are blessed. Do not fear their threats. Do not be frightened. Remember, Peter lived in a time and in a day when it was very dangerous to be a follower of Jesus. In fact, Peter is eventually put to death because of what he believes about Jesus. He actually is hung on a cross upside down. Instead of being hung on a cross regular like Jesus was, he's hung on a cross upside down at his own request because he refuses to be crucified in the same manner as Jesus because he didn't view himself as worthy to be crucified in the same manner as Jesus. So he asked to be hung upside down. This is very, very dangerous. One of the reasons it was dangerous is because the entire Roman culture was predicated on the belief that there were many gods. In some seasons of the Roman culture, it was believed that the emperor of Rome was a god. And so therefore, Peter comes and says, there aren't many gods, there are one God. There is one God. And there aren't many paths to that one God. There's only one path to that God, and it's through Jesus and what he did for us that we could never do. This was dangerous to communicate because you are taking the belief system of the entire Roman culture and turning it upside down. And Peter says, do not fear their threats. Do not be frightened. In a culture in which it was dangerous, he's saying, don't worry about what they can do to you. And then he goes on to say something incredibly powerful about this dynamic of living in a culture for which you are unprepared for what might come because of what you believe and why you believe what you do. He says, but in your hearts, revere Christ as Lord. The word but makes a change from what he previously said. He said, don't be afraid. Don't, you know, if you're going to suffer, suffer for doing good. And who's going to harm you for doing good? Well, the reality is, first century followers of Jesus were being persecuted by the Roman government because they were followers of Jesus. And he's saying, even though you're being persecuted, even though you're being suffered, even though you're suffering for doing good and doing the right thing, he goes, but in spite of that, in your hearts, revere Christ as Lord. The word for revere literally means to put as top priority. Now, in this culture, people weren't going around and asking random questions about what you believe and why you believe. They were asking questions about what you believe to determine where your loyalty lies. In the Roman culture, because emperor was considered a god, many people declared their loyalty to the emperor. In fact, when Jesus was being put through the trial, and the Jewish religious leaders wanted the Roman government's assistance to put Jesus to death, which they didn't have the authority to do on their own, so they had to get the Roman government manipulated into their plan. One of the things they said during that time is, we have no king but Caesar. They professed their loyalty to Caesar to get the Roman government to help them accomplish what they wanted to accomplish. People would determine and declare their loyalty to Caesar. And so when the question is asked about what you believe and why you believe it, and people were asking you to declare your loyalty, they were asking you to declare your political position and your opinion of the people who serve in those positions of power and authority. So Peter says, regardless of what's going on in the culture, regardless of the way that the Roman culture is established and structured and all of that, in your hearts, revere Christ as Lord. Put Jesus first. Make a decision about what you believe and what place Jesus will have in your life. Don't be afraid. Don't be concerned by their threats. Don't be frightened. In your hearts, make your decision. Declare where your loyalty will lie. And when you declare where your loyalty will lie, there may come a time, because when you are asked about what you believe and why you believe, and you communicate your loyalty to Christ rather than to Caesar, there may come a time when someone will say, why do you believe what you believe? Why have you declared your loyalty to Christ? Why have you not declared your loyalty to Caesar? And then Peter tells us that when that time comes, when that moment happens, when someone asks you what you believe and why you believe, he says, always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. Always be prepared. So, participate if you'd like. When are we supposed to be prepared?
Always.
Always be prepared. But yet, how often do we find ourselves in circumstances and situations for which we are totally unprepared?
Always.
Peter says, always be prepared. Even, here's the thing. It's almost like Peter is saying, expect the question to be asked. And even before the question is asked, be ready to have an answer. Know what you believe. Know why you believe it, and be able to articulate it, even when there's little time and maybe even less interest. Always be prepared, because there will come a time when someone asks you what you believe and why you believe it. And so always be prepared. But notice what Peter says to be prepared for. He says, always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks for the reason for the hope that you have. Now, notice what Peter doesn't say to be prepared to answer. He doesn't say to be prepared to answer all the questions people might have. He doesn't say, and interestingly enough, the word answer, the Greek word that's used for answer there, is literally translated as defense. And so he says, always be prepared to give a defense to everyone who asks to give the reason. But notice what he's not asking you to defend. He's asking you to defend the reason for the hope that you have. He's not asking you to defend the Christian worldview. He's not asking you to defend the Bible. Interestingly enough, when Peter wrote this, the Bible didn't even exist. He's not asking you to defend the Bible. He's not asking you to defend the way the world works and the way the world doesn't work sometimes. He's simply asking followers of Jesus to always be prepared to give an answer, to give a defense to anyone who asks, to give the reason for the hope that you have. Here's the question that Peter says we need to be asked, or we need to be prepared to answer when it's asked. Why have you chosen to follow Jesus? Why do you choose to follow Jesus? Again, in the culture of the day, why do you choose to follow Jesus over Caesar? Why do you choose to follow Jesus over Judaism? Why do you choose to follow Jesus over anything else? Why do you choose to follow Jesus? This is incredibly personal. When I'm asked about what I believe and why I believe, Peter tells me that I should be able to answer and give a reason for the hope that I have. Why have I chosen to follow Jesus? I think if we had the opportunity to have Peter standing right here, and we said, Peter, if you were asked that question, what answer would you give? I think Peter would give us a simple, straightforward response. I think Peter would give us a one-word, simple, straightforward response for why he believed what he believed. Because Peter was a pretty straightforward, simple kind of guy. Got in trouble sometimes, but that's who he was. And all that. And I think that if we had the opportunity to have him here and ask him, you tell us what your answer would be if someone comes and says, what do you believe and why? I think he would use one word. I think he would say the resurrection. I think Peter would say, I believe in Jesus because of the resurrection. I think that'd be it. I think that's the only answer he would have to give. In fact, if we rewind two chapters to the very beginning of the letter that Paul wrote this be prepared part in, he starts out and sets the context for everything else that he's going to write. And when he sets the context that he sets about everything else he's going to write is the resurrection. Here's what he says. He says, in his great mercy, he has given us new birth into a living hope. And remember, he said, always be ready to give an answer to anyone who asks to give you a reason for the hope that you have. So he has set it off for hope. that you have through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, and into an inheritance that can never perish, spoil, or fade. Peter says, in God's great mercy, he has given us hope through the resurrection of Jesus. And he stakes everything on the resurrection. I would imagine some of the conversations that he had with people is, people says, well, Peter, why do you believe what you believe? Well, I believe because of the resurrection. Well, what about Noah? And the ark? And the flood? And the animals? Was it really 2x2? Was it really this? Was it really that? And I imagine Peter going, you know what? I have no idea. I don't know about all that. It's fascinating to talk about. Somebody might even write a book about it someday. It is fascinating to talk about. But I don't know, because I wasn't there. But what I do know is I saw Jesus hang on a cross, and I saw Jesus die. I saw him taken down. I saw him placed in a tomb. And then 3 days later, I had breakfast with him. So I don't know about anything else. I do know that. And then somebody comes to him and says, hey, Peter, what was the deal? Remember the time when Jesus fed the 5,000 people with a few fish and bread? And Peter goes, dude, do I remember that? Yeah, I was there. And it was the coolest thing I ever saw. He goes, every time we turned around, there was more fish and there was more bread. And one kid only had a little bit to start out with, and Jesus took it. And before you knew it, 5,000 people plus the women and the children, everybody was full. Everybody had everything they wanted to eat. And then we picked up 12 basketfuls left over. It was the coolest thing I've ever seen. Well, not the coolest thing I've ever seen, because Jesus did some other pretty cool stuff too. But it was one of the coolest things I've ever seen. Now, Peter says to this person that asked the question, I have no idea how he did it. How he did it remains a mystery to me. I have no idea how he kept getting more and more fish and more bread, and people got full, and the 12 out. I have no idea how any of that happened. But what I do know is that I saw Jesus hang on a cross, die, get taken down from that cross, placed in a tomb. And then 3 days later, he invited me and my buddies to eat fish with him on a bank. And then we got to hang out with him for 40 days. I don't know. I can't answer all the questions. I can't answer how he did that. I can't answer who shut the door and who opened the door on the ark and all that. And I don't really know. But what I do know is that I believe Jesus died for my sins and rose from the dead. And then Jesus looked at the people asking and go, you know, man, think about this for a minute. If somebody can predict their own death and resurrection and then pull it off, maybe there's somebody worth consider following. So why do I believe what I believe? I believe what I believe because Jesus predicted his own death and resurrection and then pulled it off. And I got to see it. I got to be a part of it. I got to hang out with him. I've staked everything on the resurrection. And so Peter says to people like you and people like me, always be prepared to give an answer. When somebody asks you for the reason for the hope that you have, why you place your trust in Jesus rather than something else, the resurrection. That's why. I placed my faith in Jesus because of the resurrection. Because, dude, I got to tell you, if somebody can predict their own death and resurrection and then pull it off, I'm going to stake my claim on them instead of something else. And then if we fast forward back to chapter 3 from this, Peter starts giving us some insights into not only what we tell people, but how we do it. When he said, but do this, give an answer for the reason for the hope that you have, but do this with gentleness and respect. Giving an answer to anyone who asks for the reason for the hope that we have isn't about winning an argument. It's not about settling a debate. It's not about me being right and them being wrong. It's about where I've placed my faith and giving them an answer that might lead them down a path of placing their faith in the same place. It's not about getting them to vote red or blue or blue or red or purple or whatever. It's not about being legalistic and judgmental. It's about moving people in their relationship with God based on what Jesus has done for them as a result of the resurrection. Now, I know in our culture today that gentleness and respect seem to be novel ideas. In a society that has lost almost all sense of common decency and consideration for one another, we still understand how gentleness and respect work, right? We understand that when someone approaches us, when someone comes at us harshly, how do we respond? We typically respond in one of two ways when someone comes at us harshly. We tend to respond with either fight or flight. We either try to avoid the conversation and get away, or we go into attack mode in response. Is that what normally happens? And Peter says, do this with gentleness and respect. Because when someone comes at us, we tend to push back against them, maybe even to the point of disregarding them, excuse me, and disregarding not only them, but disregarding what they believe. And so as followers of Jesus, when we go at people with legalism, judgmentalism, and criticism, their response is often to disregard us and to disregard what we believe, including disregarding the resurrection of Jesus, which, by the way, is the greatest event in human history. We know from our own experience that when someone comes to us with gentleness and respect rather than at us with harsh judgment and criticism, that we are at the very least much more likely to consider what they have to say, whether we ever fully believe what they say or not. And then Peter goes on to say, adds another ingredient to how we do this, keeping a clear conscience. Well, how do you keep a clear conscience? You make sure that your behaviors line up with your beliefs. You make sure that your actions match your words. You do what you say you're going to do, and you don't do what you say you're not going to do. You keep a clear conscience by not doing anything that will compromise your integrity or compromise your answer to the reason for the hope that you have. I don't know about you, but I would rather maintain my integrity than have to answer for compromising. So we do this with gentleness and respect, and we keep a clear conscience, which means that the way we live is a part of our answer as much of the words that we choose, even in a moment. And then Peter goes on to say, so we're always prepared to give a reason, we do it with gentleness and respect, and we keep a clear conscience, so that those who speak maliciously against your good behavior in Christ may be ashamed of their slander. Here's the thing. There are going to be people who don't believe what we believe as followers of Jesus. There may even be people who look for reasons not to like us because of what we believe. There may be even people who speak maliciously about what we believe and why we believe it. And there may even be people who speak maliciously about us and what we do because of what we believe. But Peter says, we do these things in this way, always prepared to give an answer for the reason, for the hope that we have, so that those people who speak maliciously about our good behavior may be ashamed of their slander. Can you imagine what it would be like if the harshest criticism that could be levied against followers of Jesus is the good that we do? Can you imagine the good that we do leading people to say, I don't believe anything they believe? The whole Jesus thing, I'll give them the Jesus's, a real person, but he was just a good teacher in the first century, and he was kind of a cool guy. So some weird stuff happened that's not really explainable, but he wasn't the Son of God, and he didn't rise. That's all. You know, I don't believe anything they believe, but man, they sure do a lot of good stuff. Can you imagine if the only criticism that could be levied against us was the good that we did, rather than sometimes the way we do the good that we do? Can you imagine how different that would be in relationship to the answer for the reason for the hope that we have? It would be better, right? It would be better, right? Okay, this side of the room now. This side of the room, join in. It would be better, right? All right. Peter actually points us to the better. He says, for it is better, if it is God's will, to suffer for doing good than for doing evil. Now, how many people would agree that the world in which we live, at some point, in some way, each and every one of us is going to experience and encounter suffering in some way? How many people would say that suffering is probably, in the world in which we live, unavoidable? Yeah, there are different levels of suffering, and some people always seem to get the better end of life. You know, but at some level, each and every one of us is going to experience and encounter suffering. So here's the question. If you're going to experience suffering at some point in some way, would you rather experience suffering for doing good or suffering for doing bad? It may be the same suffering, but would you rather experience whatever it is for doing good? Would you rather be, for lack of a better word, would you rather be attacked for doing good than attacked for doing evil? Would you rather suffer for keeping your integrity or suffer for compromising your integrity? Would you rather suffer for doing what is right or suffer for doing what is wrong? Here's the thing. When we are in the wrong, when we do the wrong thing, we open ourselves up to criticism for doing the wrong thing. When we do the right thing, as Jesus intends for us to do, the only thing we are opening ourselves up to is doing the right thing. So Peter says, it is better to suffer for doing good than suffer for doing evil. Which again goes to the idea that our life and the way we live our life matters in the context of the answer that we give for the reason for the hope that we have. It is better to suffer for doing good than evil. And then he goes, if you suffer in this world, not if, when you suffer in this world, know that you're not alone. Everybody else suffers around you. But here's someone else who suffered. For Christ also suffered once for sins, the righteous for the unrighteous, to bring us to God. There was a grander purpose in Jesus' suffering than just the suffering that Jesus encountered and experienced. And there may just be a grander purpose in any suffering that we experience than just the suffering we experience. The suffering we experience may even open a door to a conversation with someone about why we were able to endure the suffering we were with such grace, why we were able to still do good in the midst of the suffering, why we were able to still maintain our faith in Jesus in a world that doesn't make sense, in a world that doesn't work like we think it should. How were you able to do that? Well, I was able to do that because I placed my trust in Jesus. Well, why do you place your trust in Jesus? Well, I placed my trust in Jesus because of the resurrection. It may never change what anyone else believes. The person who asked the question may never believe what we believe. And when we give an answer to the reason for the hope we have, we may not be able to answer every question that they have. We may not know the answer to every question. And we may not be able to give a long, drawn-out answer. In fact, it's better if our answer is short and memorable and portable. It's something that we can say in a moment when there's little time and maybe even less interest. It's something that we can recall in a moment's notice and we're completely caught off guard by the question. And it's something we can take with us wherever we go. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you, to give a reason for the hope that you have. What if that answer was simply, "I believe Jesus died for my sin and rose from the dead"?
Thanks again for tuning in, and we hope this message helped you take a step in your relationship with God. If you're considering other ways to connect, check out HCC's website, social media, and YouTube channels.